Hey, I'm Jake Brennan, and I want to tell you about Disgraceland, the award-winning music and true crime podcast that I host. Disgraceland tells the stories of musicians getting away with murder and behaving very badly. Fleetwood Mac, Nipsey Hussle, Cardi B, Ozzy Osbourne, Taylor Swift, Tupac, The Beatles, Amy Winehouse, Jay-Z, The Grateful Dead, and so many more. This is not the music history you've heard before. This is an uncensored, immersive look at the lives of musical icons as seen through the crimes they've committed or that have been perpetrated against them. Did Jerry Lee Lewis murder his fifth wife? What really happened to Sam Cooke in that seedy motel at 3 a.m.? And how did the Rolling Stones wind up sleeping with the First Lady? Wait, what? New episodes of Disgraceland drop every Tuesday with bonus episodes released on Mondays and Thursdays. So get in, buckle up, and join me in Disgraceland. Available right now, wherever you get your podcasts. Rock and roll.
I'm thinking about one of the gigs I went to, which was Bauhaus at Walthamstow Assembly Hall. It would have been maybe 1980. I've just moved to London. It was freezing and, I kind of crimped my hair and looked a little bit gothy. And I went in and then I was petrified. It was full of blokes with Mohicans. And, I just felt very, very small. And it's like, God, this is big league. You know, back in Coventry, I was one of the, up faces of that town. Why nobody? This is scary.
Hi, this is Lowell Tolhurst, co-founder of The Cure.
This is Budgie, co-founder of The Creatures, drummer with The Slits, and Susie and the Banshees.
Welcome to Curious Creatures.
Life after punk.
You may think you know the territory,
but we drew the map.
Continue our conversation with Julianne Regan talking about Terry Hall, ghost towns,
and a whole bunch of stuff. Something that we think about a lot on this podcast about how, you know, for a lot of us, it was like, we got to leave. We got to get out from where we grew up. We got to get out and we got to do something different. And to make music was the vehicle to do it. To get out of the place, you know, and change things. I mean, you know, because, you know, Crawley, not the nicest place to grow up in either, you know, and it's full of skinheads back then in the 70s who used to, you know, chase me and Bob over the bridge. But, you know, you survive. You survive to get out and make something better, you know, and that kind of thing was driving all of us back then for sure. You know?
Somebody commented on talking about Terry and said that he of all people would say that you couldn't escape where you were from. And he felt this chap was talking and saying he's now back in Coventry. And it's not for the love of the place. It's just because it's in your bones. There's something. And I suppose I was trying to figure out, is that something to do with something maybe inherently British, which is the class system. But where we come from, I've been out of England for a long time, and I left St. Helens a long time before that. So I was, a major part was in the capital, in London, which is not like Britain at all. It's like, no. New York's not America, Berlin is not Germany, and that's where I end up. But it's, I find my northernness comes out if I'm here in Berlin. I get right northern here. Very easily, and I don't have to speak to my sister either to do it anymore, you know. But there's something in, it's not like I feel know your place, my lad, you know, don't get above your station. But there's something that I appreciate maybe about life because of the situation. It was pretty rough, like as in Coventry, as you describe. Liverpool, St. Helens, we went through, and... Well, you were long. Went through a long period of it was going downhill fast.
There was, you know, there was not many choices. I mean, I don't know that there are now particularly, but, you know, there was not many choices for us growing up. So the escape route was like you were either going to be a footballer or you're going to play music, you know.
Neither of which I was really qualified for.
I can remember, you know, buying the music papers for many, many years and reading the gig guide in the back. And just thinking, you know, the bigger cities like Manchester and Liverpool and, of course, London, where the bands were going. Yeah. And of course, it was pre-internet. Yeah. So the pull to London was very much, well, I can go and see like about four bands a week that I'd like to go and see instead right. of like one yeah. every yeah. month in Coventry. So that's what it was. It was at that time, London had a kind of monopoly on being the place where you had to be. To try and get to that next level, and also to meet other musicians.
I have a theory about that. It's like Dharma transmission, you know? The way you're going to learn how to do what we did was from watching it and being at it, you know? That was how we got it. I mean, now, you know, everything's on the internet, blah, 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 but that was what we had to do back then. We had to go to the gigs. We could hear Peel on the radio every night. But other than that, you got to buy the record, go to the gigs, you got to hang out with people that think the same, and that's the only way that it was going to get across to you. I mean, I still remember going to see the Stranglers with Robert, like in Croydon, Red Lion, or whatever it was called, you know, and it was like the pair of us, we were like, oh my God, these are all the people we've heard about, you know, like safety pins and sticky up hair and that. And me and him just sort of rushed to the front and just, you know, dashed about like stupid loons, you know, and it was great. It was great. And then we came home and we're like, okay, we can do something like that, you know. And so that was very much more, it's a much more visceral way of getting the information, you know.
Yeah. I'm thinking about one of the gigs I went to, which was Bauhaus at Walthamstow Assembly Hall. Yeah. It would have been maybe 1980. I've just moved to London. It was freezing and, you know, I kind of crimped my hair and looked a little bit gothy. And I went in and then I was petrified. Yeah. It was full of blokes with Mohicans.
Wow.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just felt very, very small. And it's like, God, this is big league.
Yeah.
You know, back in Coventry, I was one of the, up faces of that town. Why nobody? This is, you know.
Yeah.
This is scary.
It's scary when you walk out onto a stage in some like Hemel Hempstead and you're confronted with like a sea of like skinheads.
Yeah.
Skinheads, yeah.
You know, with the occasional dotted around, like somebody who looks maybe like you wouldn't mind standing next to the bar with.
Yeah, yeah.
And you spend half the gig, Susie would spend half the gig protecting them.
Yeah.
They're getting, it was just crazy times. Maybe it's a bit more homogenized and prepackaged now in many ways.
Oh, totally. Absolutely, totally. I mean, it's all about everything being curated. I mean, nobody curated anything for us back then. We found out stuff, you know. I remember going to see Buzzcocks at Lyceum, you know, and I was just dancing like a loon there, and it was great, you know. But it wasn't, nobody told me, oh, you know, Pete Shelley, you better go and see him, you know. It was like I found out. I heard it on the radio, I heard it on Peel, and I'm like, okay, I like this, and I hear John Mayer playing, you know, great stuff.
I've got a drum thing for you.
Oh, okay,
come on, Julianne. There must be a drummer in there somewhere.
When we released our first album, and you know, I don't know about you, but we were kind of, oh, thank you to this person, thank you to that person. And of course you have little deals. So it was like, thank you to Tama and Siljan.
Oh, yes.
And I met somebody backstage and they went, so, I mean, I've tried to find out about Tama and Siljan. They're obviously goddesses that you worship. I had to break that girl's heart.
Oh, wow. That's the best drummer joke I've ever heard, actually. I think I'm going to keep that one. I'm going to trot that one out. And things. Yeah.
It's wonderful, yeah. I'm at the altar of Tama and Siljan. My first ones were Zin. If I think, and Olympic.
Well.
Yes.
And I actually loved a Rogers drum kit, but I could nowhere near afford it, you know. And I think my first one I bought on higher, you know, HP installments was a Beverly kit.
I dragged my mum down to the shop to you know, co-sign for me on an HP agreement for a Maxron kit, which is probably about £200 back then. I didn't pay off for that bloody thing until I was about 30, you know. It just went on and on, like, you know, compound interest forever.
I was doing high-class cabaret gigs around Liverpool at the time, so I probably, you know, I think we probably flogged it. No, I kept that drum kit. I had that Beverly kit until I hit London, and I played it on the Slits album.
That was
my payment. Wow. They said, we'll fix your drum kit for you.
Right.
Island Record. Big spending Island Records.
Right.
So I probably got like 200 quid, I think, to fix the drums so they actually I could actually play them.
That's like that old joke was in the back of International Times. Remember that sort of magazine paper that had your special, you know, was like done. They got taken to court, all kinds of things. So the three guys that ran that thing, and they had a thing about, you know, the music business. Some guy waving a big pile of money and going, "Here you go, some money. Buy yourself some T-shirts, and we'll just take all the albums." Yeah.
So we just talk about Terry Hall. Terry Hall worked with Ian Brody. Ian Brody, Lightning Seeds. Ian Brody was a guitarist in the band I started with in Liverpool. So we had Ian Brody, and we had Bill Drummond, and we had David Balfe, and we had Holly Johnson. So we had Frankie Goes to Hollywood, the KLF, Lightning Seeds, Atlantic Records, the Blue Coat Gallery. Could we get signed? No. We're the creme de la creme of the misfits of Liverpool.
It's funny, you know, when we had Michael Dempsey on here, he was talking about that, like, you know, that was the thing, you know, when we were starting out, you got to get signed, you know, and the first label we got signed to was Hansa, a German label, and they had an advert on the back of Melody Maker. You know, they didn't really understand who we were at all, you know, and they just signed us because they wanted another boy band, you know, like our audition was at Morgan Studios in London where we recorded our first few albums, and they didn't actually record us for the audition, they just filmed us. Because they were like, yes, oh, you know, don't, but the tape's not running. It's okay. We'll just film you. And they signed us, and they signed David Sylvian in Japan, you know, and that was it, you know. And Japan stayed with them, and we sort of left, or was probably asked to leave after about 6 months.
Isn't it lovely not to be worried about all that stuff?
Well,
oh, it's wonderful.
Yes,
it's absolutely wonderful.
I can see it all over your face, Julian. You're going like, I'm so glad I'm out of that.
I knock the odd song out from time to time for pleasure.
Good.
I stick it out for free.
Yeah.
And because I just can't face it. I just can't.
I noticed you're not taking any offers for...
Did you want me to do a personal party?
I thought you were going to sing a bit.
We'll talk about that offline if you do need a bar mitzvah, birthday party or anything. But no, I can't do that. I can't. I just can't. When I think about me playing live, peeing live, I hope they can come out.
Wherever you want to go, wherever you go, we'll go right with you.
Yeah.
When I think about me playing live, it seems like a different human being. God knows how I ever did it, honestly. I couldn't, you know, because when I've just finished my job. I did 7 years as a lecturer.
Yeah.
And towards the end, got to be honest, walking out in front of 70, just 70, 70, 18-year-olds who are paying $9,000 a year, that felt scarier than a Royal Albert Hall gig. You know, I've kind of lost that mojo of standing in front of people and forgetting myself.
I can go out on stage now, and I'll go out on stage because it's not my gig.
Yeah.
Quite recently, I've just been the drummer who's brought in to add the drums to the band.
Yeah.
But I have all this experience behind me and years of doing it. But I love just going out and talking to the audience.
Mm.
Not on the mic.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, just making sure that everybody's okay, you know.
Yeah.
Because I feel at home there.
Yeah.
But I also am here in Berlin, and for the last 7 years, I've been a lecturer. A British college that established itself here in 2015. And we started with about six students. And there was like, you know, three drummers and three guitarists, a couple of bass players, and everybody else wanted to be a vocalist.
Mm-hmm.
And all we did was like band performance. Now it's a huge music business school.
Yeah.
And it's insane. And yeah, I get anxiety, like just the thought of going in and having to address all these young people.
I don't know about you. I always found it harder with the smaller group of people. The larger groups of people, you know, if it's like 1,000, 2,000, 10,000, 100,000. That doesn't bother me. I feel comfortable with that for some reason.
But you mean behind, on your own or behind a kit? Or
both,
with a band?
Both ways. A larger amount of people doesn't kind of bother me. It's like, it's the small people where you can see the whites of their eyes, you know?
Maybe, I mean, you've been out on like your book tour.
Yeah.
And it's, you're driving.
Yeah. But that was fun. I mean, I did a date with Julianne in Bath, and you know, the whole thing was just lovely, fun, you know, just really fun and comfortable and stuff. And I mean, that was like not, you know, huge audiences, but it was comfortable because most people are there and they're because they want to be there. They're not there because they're like, oh, well, I'm going to see what's happening tonight. They just, they made an effort to come to see it. So yeah. I feel comfortable on stage, for want of a better word, you know.
You say you've just finished at the college. Yeah. So what do you think, is it life opened up a bit?
It's weird. I loved my 7 years there. I really did. But, you know, when you get to that point, it's like, that's that chapter then. Yeah. I kind of closed the chapter without thinking what the next one was. I've no idea.
Better get down the bookstore and see what's going on.
What are you
going
to say? The job centre. Get down the job centre. Don't want to go there. But no, I mean, it was brilliant, but I just felt, being really honest, I it's like gigs. You know, a gig and you're not in the mood and the audience can tell. Yeah. I can't talk in front of 70, 18-year-olds and feel kind of, what am I doing here? Can't take $9,000 off them, you know. There's a lot I will miss about that, you know, because I had some great students and, you know, I think, oh, this is going to sound really pious, forgive me, but I have made a difference to a few people's, a few kids' lives and all that is good. But as for next, I am going to probably carry on with the little book I've been writing for the past few years.
Right.
And continue just doing little bits of music. Stick it out for free at the moment.
The little book will grow into a bigger book.
I hope so. Yeah, because I love.
And I know you were saying, you mentioned somewhere you one of the students you did some collaboration with as well, which I think is wonderful. You just kind of.
Yeah, I mean that's a kind of freedom when you're employed at the university. It feels a little bit weird to be kind of collaborating with a student. It's allowed, but it feels a little bit odd.
Yeah.
So now I've got my freedom. There's this wonderful girl called Katrina Swift with a beautiful voice, and we're just kind of knocking a few ideas around together. So that's really nice. And just the stuff that I'm doing on my own, I've been putting it out for free. I think, do you know what? We've talked about the music industry. I think the furthest I would go would be like Bandcamp and maybe some little Bijou label that might just do a small run of CD and vinyl or something.
Yeah.
We're not in a dissimilar place ourselves.
That's exactly what I was thinking. Yeah, I mean, you know, we've made a record. We're thinking, we're trying to find a place to put it, and you know, we're both writing. Budge's writing. Actually, I've seen some of Julianne's book already, and it's going to be very good. It's going to be very good. You heard it here first.
It's so just taking that belief and taking the next step, isn't it?
So what was the first cigarette that you had?
I know what mine was.
Right.
It was number six. I think it was number six.
Number six.
Yeah.
Okay.
Players number six, because I believe they were the brushing up off the floor of all the other cigarettes they made.
Like PG tips for tea, right?
Like yeah, it could have been Benson and Hedges, because I think my my stepmom smoked B&H.
Oh, the gold packet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I tell you, I aspired to Sobrani Black Russian.
Yeah. Mickey D smoked them.
Of course he did.
Yeah, of course.
He's a bass player. Of course he did. What else is he going to smoke? And because of the gold tip, they didn't stick to your lip.
No.
Because they had this smooth gold tip, which was made of foil or something.
Yes, that's right. It had foil. So what about yours, Julian? What was your first? Do you remember?
Me?
Did you smoke?
I have virgin lungs. Never done.
That's
it.
Great. That's wonderful. That's great. You don't have to go through all of
this. One voice I missed out.
No, you did miss out. You didn't
did
miss
you
out.
Ever like? Did you like the smell of tobacco at all?
Oh no, I was one of these. And you know,
oh no, not the smoke, but you know that smell that comes out of a packet of cigarettes when it's opened.
Yeah.
Oh, I know what you mean. Now, I don't mind a pipe smell, actually, or a cigar smell. That might make me a connoisseur of smoke.
Well, back in St. Helens, it was like people smoked, like, tobacco in pipes as well, you know. Rich. And you just thought, whoa, that's beautiful, until you tried it. You
know? Yeah, I'm sure.
No. I remember flipping open a packet of... You think like that, flipping open a packet. I remember flipping open a packet of gold. Player's Gold Leaf.
Yeah, that was the one I liked in the, with the, like the little red, like sort of dark burgundy packet with gold around, yeah.
And the ad always in the magazine had like a guy with a flat cap deer stalker or something with a really lovely like spaniel or red setter sitting alongside of him.
Yeah.
Sitting in the open air, enjoying the fresh air with a cigarette.
They were selling a dream, weren't they?
Oh, yeah. Consulate, cool as a mountain stream.
Yeah, and we all bought into it, except Julian. She didn't buy into it, thank goodness. My first cigarette, which explains why life went the way it did for me, my first cigarette was Capstan Full Strength, like they gave it to the guys in the Navy. I remember smoking it at the bus stop on the way to school, and I nearly fell over. It was that strong, you know.
How old were you? It's like, were you 6 years old?
No, I was at least 8. No, I don't know.
You and Robert at the bus stop saying, Robert, have you tried one of these?
I'm just thinking of going to school, you know, going to the school and like going, ending up in school smelling of fags because it was like a wet Tuesday morning and the top bus of the bus was full of smokers. And so your fellow smokers, those who smoked, could get away with it.
That's exactly what me and Steve Forrester did. We would sit up to the top of the stairs,
yeah,
and we could smoke a little bit because the whole place was full of smoke. And Daddy Mulligan was the guy that first gave me a cigarette, if I remember rightly. He used to have a little burn in his pocket on his trousers where he was holding the cigarette, trying to hide it, like, you know, from teachers and things, and the ash burnt a little hole in the pocket.
Funny, you know. Never wanted to smoke.
No, you didn't?
Not at school, no. When I got to the art college, I wanted to, you know.
Okay.
I really wanted, like, Gueuloir or Gitane, you know, or Disque Bleu.
Oh, yeah.
Because
they
smelt foul, but, like, cool.
They did, yeah.
All this talk of smoking is making my smoker's cough come back.
Yeah, Bob smoked Gitanes for a while. Was it Gitanes? So what's the one with the blue lady on the front?
Yeah, it could be Gitane. Yeah.
Okay,
but they're all made by the same, aren't they? Same, like Disque Bleu. That was the other one.
Right, they all come out of that factory. And
she had I think there's a little dancer in the middle of a circle. Yeah. Looked like a bit like a wimpy concrete mixer kind of logo.
Yes, I remember.
If I remember correctly.
Wow.
We do digress, don't we, on here?
Here's a question for you. We're all past that magical point, you know, the 6-0, right? And I don't know about you, but like my 50s, I didn't really like much. I thought, oh shit, you know, I'm not a young guy anymore, you know. 60 was wonderful because I was like, hey, I'm still here, I'm still compos mentis, I can still do stuff, I've got all my faculties, and nothing really matters that much anymore, you know. It's not like concerned about what's going to go, how's that going to happen? Oh, how's this going to happen? It's like life suddenly became so much easier because, you know, you become aware of your mortality and that, like, this is the third act, so you might as well make it the best you can, kind of thing, you know? It's like, that's the way I feel about it. It's like, I'm not going to second guess myself too much, I guess is what I mean, yeah.
I like this idea of getting things, removing things out of the way. I seem to have spent my whole life piling things in and going like, oh, God, I've got no time to do anything. I've got hundreds of unread books and half-begun poems or drawings or bits of music. And we actually pull this album together after some false starts, and it became something we hadn't expected. And right now, I really want to simplify everything so I can leave myself some space for a young family and a new dog, a little puppy that arrived, you know. And but also just to to digest more, to really savor each moment much more.
I think there is something in this, and again, I really don't want this to sound pompous, but I think, I don't know about you, but when I was young, I was like, I had this kind of inner dynamo that just propelled me into doing things. And then there was this kind of like this middle period where you, I don't know, you're still a little bit lost and you try a load of things, and I don't know, maybe it is the magic.
You're still kind of waiting for the dynamo to kick in and propel you.
Yeah, but then you think, but it's okay. It's all right to be, you know, I've stopped apologising for things.
Right.
And I've said a few times tonight that I'm quite shy, which I am, but I don't apologise for it anymore. It's like, look, I am quite introverted and I'm not going to spend the rest of my life pretending not to be, just so you might like me, because it's exhausting.
Yes.
And you're not getting a real person. So I think there's that kind of, not, it's not as rude as like me or lump me, but you just, it's like, as you say, it's the third act long. You, what you see is what you get.
But I think you hit the nail on the head there. It's like you stop, I've stopped worrying about what people think about me particularly. You know, it's like, okay, I know who I am by this age, you know. I'm pretty certain of who I am. I'm also certain of who I'm not. Mm. And, you know, if you like me, that's great. Like Lady Sovereign said, you know, like, it, you know, I won't sing it.
Go on. What song can we sing to go out with? I got a flute in my pocket and I just can't get no love.
There's a whole load of things there, but I feel much, much better about it all.
But I want to hear your album.
Me too. I played a bit today because only the mixes I have here are without the vocal contributions that we ended up packing into the album as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going like, I still love this album as an instrumental.
Yeah.
This
is lovely. And we did a lot of field recording. We went out into Yosemite, the national park. Lowell's backyard.
Mm. Yeah.
Out in California there. And we found a lady who had let us stay at her house as an old family friend. And she had an Indian drum, a horizontal drum, with natural skin stretched on it. And Lowell and I just sat there kind of just playing together.
Mm.
And that's kind of what sounds like still the lead opening track of the album.
Yeah, it is.
And it just it picks up from single notes. It's quite Steve Reich in a way, but it's but with no obvious influences apart from let the flow take us where it needs to go. I think that's a good template for the way things...
For life,
yeah.
You're right about the thing about the dynamo stuff, because we had Terry Nunn from Berlin on here a while back, and she said something to the effect of, like, you know, she wished that when she was younger she had slowed down a bit to see all the stuff she was doing, because she was just like rushing from one thing to the next thing, and now we got to do this, now we got to do that, and missed it all, she said.
Well, how many countries have we all been to? And you know, I was listening to one of the podcasts and you were saying, Budgie, there was a time when the rest of the band were staying in bed, but you'd get up early and go and do something.
Yeah.
You know, that was my first tour of not drinking, I think.
I remember those days. I wish I had more of those days. I remember getting up in Amsterdam one morning. No one else wanted to play or have breakfast or anything. So going off to the Rijksmuseum, and that's a great memory of being on tour.
Good. Where are you this evening, Julianne? Where are you?
I'm in Bath, me love.
In where?
Bath. You know, you were talking about the Rachel Devon thing, you know, because down here the big one is Me Babber. Oh, that's Bristol, Me Babber. And it's like men will say to men, they'll say, all right, me lover, or they'll say, very sweet cheeks.
Sweet things cheeks.
Like, it's a very affectionate place with gender crossing. Wow. It's funny, you wouldn't say Bath is friendly. It's very polite.
Yeah.
But the locals will call you love and sweet cheeks.
Oh, lovely.
So it's a nice place to be.
I love that about that English thing, you know. You're right, love.
Love, yeah, love. One of the old lovey actors, he was saying that his favourite kind of term of affection is love.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it transcends geography and gender. And I think there's something in
that. Lowell knows when back in the Banshee days, we had a dedicated driver, and he's worked for Iggy Pop for years since he worked for us. His name is Joss.
Yes.
Joss Grain. But Joss used to come in every day and he'd go like, "You're right, love."
Yeah.
"Oh, love, what have you done? What have you done, love?" You know, when we just like done something stupid, like fall off my drum kit, you know, and spray my ankle or something.
And that was exceptionally good because Joss looked like a stormtrooper. So he was,
looked like a stormtrooper. Yeah. He was the most vicious looking beast you'd ever see. But Yorkshire, Lancashire, heart of gold. I can't remember which side he fell on. But he's still around. And it's lovely that we are, and it's lovely to see you, Julianne.
It is.
It's been wonderful talking with you.
It's been such a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Best of luck. All good fortunes for your future.
Yes.
Curious Creatures is created and presented by Lol Tolhurst and Budgie.
Producer, Joe Wong.
Producer and audio designer, Dan Didier.
Executive producer, Mark Cates.
Associate producer, Sophie Wild.
Digital marketing, Margie Taylor.
Art and logo design, Justin Thomas Kay.
Music production, Jackknife Lee.
Curious Creatures is on the web, and you can access us at www.curiouscreaturespodcast.com.
And you can reach us on Instagram and Facebook at Curious Creatures Official, Twitter at Cura Creatures.
To find more of the best music podcasts, visit doubleelvis.com or follow at doubleelvis on Instagram or at doubleelvis on Twitter.
Curious Creatures is a production of LXB LLC 2022.